Oh, that's right. It's hump day and it's Wednesday afternoon and it is the weekend before Memorial Day. Last Friday, the Eagle was unveiled at the Veterans Center. It was an awesome ceremony. I hope you were there. If you weren't there, I hope you've been on our Facebook page, WCRS.AM Radio, and seen all the videos and pictures that we posted from that. Following it up this weekend with Memorial Day weekend, a time to remember those that are no longer with us. It's a great time to reflect on our military. You know, a lot of people are getting a little bit cranky about the budget, that the military is going to be getting a lot more money if the budget goes through and some other programs may get cut. But, you know, without our military, where would our country be? And particularly when we see a situation like what's happened just this week in Manchester, England. So it is with great interest and excitement that I present you my guest here today. Ed DeVos is a military man, retired, went into the private sector, and then decided he needed a future. And so he started writing military fictional books, and they are very interesting. This is the fourth book that he has written, Family of Warriors. We're going to be talking about that book. And of note, I want you to know that if you like what you hear here today, you'll be able to go down to McCaslin's on Saturday, this Saturday from 11 to 1. He's going to have a book signing and selling his books, and I think you'll find it quite fascinating. So, Ed, how you doing today?
Good, thank you. I appreciate being here.
Absolutely. It's good to have you here. As a MOA person, that's how I've gotten to know you over time. And
We better tell them what MOA means.
yeah, that's right. Military Officers Association. And believe it or not, they decided to elect me vice president. So how about that? Never been in the military, but I'm still the vice president.
There you go. You married into
I married into it. I did. But I am a colonel in my own right. Did you know that?
Yes, because if you're always outrank your husband, I know that.
No, because I'm an auctioneer too.
Ah,
A
okay.
Kentucky colonel, that
There you
is.
go.
There you go. I don't pull that out too often, but when necessary.
Okay.
But Ed, where are you from? How'd you grow up?
Oh my goodness. Grew up in Florida, and my father was a bombardier in World War II, and so just as I went to college, I went to Florida Southern College, and in those days ROTC was mandatory for the first 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so got involved in the ROTC program there, and as time went on, it just seemed like the right thing to do to join the Army. Vietnam was going on, and so I was the day I graduated from college, I was commissioned,
mm-hmm.
and a week later I was at Fort Benning, Georgia, learning how to fall off an airplane while it was flying, going to jump school. So stayed in the service for 20 years.
Wow, you must have liked it.
I did. I was in the infantry, and the men in that part of the Army are just good, solid men, and you want to be with them.
Now, was your dad in the military?
Again, bombardier, World War II, Army Air Corps,
wow.
flying missions over the Pacific.
Did he talk about it?
Not very much, no. And in fact, the second book I wrote, which is called The Chaplain's Cross, which was about a mission that my father was on that he never talked about, in which his unit won a President's Unit Citation. And so that book kind of centered around that particular mission as they were bombing the equivalent of Japanese Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
On the 29th of March, 1944.
So. You know, I think that there is such I want to say a misconception about war. Nobody wants to go to war.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
And yet so many people think that the innocent bystanders, nobody wants innocent bystanders to get killed.
We go to great lengths to try and avoid civilian casualties. But the nature of the business doesn't always allow that, but we try as best we possibly can to avoid that, unlike many of the people who we fight.
Right. Absolutely. So, with this thing that happened in Manchester, England, it just seems so appropriate to be talking about what it is like to be in war. And your book, Family of Warriors, is about?
World War II.
World War II.
World War II. These are five men that I either related to or I know their story or I've interviewed. They serve in five different locations in World War II, and we put them into one family, one fictional family. The father is a World War I veteran, and so as World War II begins, these men want to serve their country. They want to do what they think is right. And so part of the book is telling their story when they're in war, but also what's happening with the family as the mother and father are saying goodbye to these sons as they go off to fight. And as I tell people when we're talking about this, I said there's always two emotions that are going on within the mother and the father.
Mm-hmm.
There's fear and there's pride. And I think that's true today. It was true when I went in service. It was true when my son went to war. It's true for all of us as we do that.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things that I was looking at in your book is that, you know, the families that are burying their sons or daughters, it never leaves them.
No.
And but you know what? Thank God that we do have families where our sons and daughters do go. We would not wish that on anybody, but it is a fact of life.
Well, and as we also tell in the book, too, part of the book is really to thank those families who generationally have served their country over and over and over again. I've met people that actually had their family has been in serving their country since the Revolutionary War, which is amazing when you think about that.
Absolutely.
But certainly today we have families who many served in World War II, then Korea, then Vietnam, and now after that. And they did, as we write in the book, they did not do that for fame or fortune. They didn't do it for money. They did it because it was the right thing to do. And fortunately, we have people today. They serve because it's the right thing to do. And so as I tell folks, as you see people today in uniform, men, women, doesn't make any difference which service, what comes to my mind is always they're serving, they're volunteering, they're doing it because they believe it's the right thing to do. And I think they need to be congratulated for that.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we certainly don't want, any more 9/11s on this side of our country.
We don't want them, but we have to prepare for them.
Exactly. And if we don't have the military capable mm-hmm. of doing mm-hmm. their job, that very much could happen here.
And from my perspective, the stronger we are, the less probable that someone will do that to us. If we're weak, then we're just inviting that kind of attack.
Stronger. And who said carry a big stick?
I think it was Mr. Roosevelt.
There you go. Carry a big stick. Yep. And let's see, what does the rest of that go? I don't remember.
Oh, was it talk softly and carry a big stick, I think.
There you go. And that is still true today. So this is what the book is about. Ed, I know I'm gonna be totally honest. I have not read this whole book, but I have glanced through it. And I love this part, this one story that I read about Christmas Day, Friday, December 25th, 1942. At the Van Ostenberg home in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've just had dinner, and the dad is, after the family finished their meal and Ben took his customary seat in the living room, he found his heart moved again. That's the dad. And Dad, Ben turned to see his two youngest sons standing before him. Yes, boys, what is it? And these are two twins. Michael and I want to walk with you just a little like you've done with our brothers. I'm not sure what you mean, Timothy. Take a walk like you've done with your brothers. Come on, Dad. We know you've done this after Christmas dinner the last few years. You took the other guys for a long walk, telling them about your days in the Army. Since we're close to enlisting, we think it's time you took us for that same walk. You two got your minds pretty well made up on enlisting? Yes, sir, we have. To do anything else would be embarrassing. We're both thinking that from everything we've heard and knowing how we like pushing ourselves, we both know what we want to do. You do? And what exactly is that? We want to go in the infantry because we've been together almost every step of our lives, being twins and all. We're thinking now we'd like to be on our own. You know, to go different units, not the same one. Ben stared at each of them, that's the dad, for a moment, both trim and sturdy like their brothers. You tell your mother about what you're thinking? No, sir, not yet. Figured we'd talk to you first. Shouldn't be a big surprise to her since we've been giving out a lot of hints about this for the while. And then they say, we want to be tested, somewhere we can feel like we're making the biggest contribution. So the infantry seems like the best place for us. We know it'll be tough, but we're okay with that. And the dad says, you two have been watching too many newsreels. You almost sound like the recruiting poster. Don't mean to. Guess What we're both trying to say is that we want to be like you. We want to follow in your footsteps. Nothing more, nothing less. Mm-hmm. And that was so true of so many.
And to put that in perspective, the father was an infantryman in World War One, and so when they say they want to be tested like him, they know that he had been in the infantry in World War One, and in fact had been the Lost Battalion, which was a unit that, just as the name says, is that they got in front of the other units that were close to them in October of 1918. They were out there for 6 days. When they first got in front of the other soldiers, they had about 595 men in that unit. Hmm. 6 days later, there were 195.
Oh, my God.
And so the father understood what that was like. And so when they say they want to be tested, they, like him, they want to have the chance to really see what that was like. Many times people will say, well, women particularly, wives particularly, well, you know, why does my husband want to go to war? How do they? And I try and explain to people, it's not that they necessarily want to go to war, but they want to be tested. Think if you were a firefighter, Ann, for 20 years, mm-hmm. and you learned had all the equipment, you had all the training, but never went to a fire. What would that be like?
It would be like I've never tried.
I don't know if this stuff works.
Right.
I don't know if I work. I don't know if I can do what I've been asked to do.
And when put in an emergency situation,
right.
I can rise to the occasion.
Right. And so I think for many of us, certainly as we're younger, we want to be tested at some point in time. Can we really be the man that we'd like to be? And so I think that's what these guys are telling their father. These are the two youngest brothers of the five.
Right.
And so they've seen their older brother go off to war. He's at this point in time, he is in the Philippines, and he's been captured by the Japanese. Nobody knows if he's alive or dead. The next two brothers just before them have enlisted. One is in the tank corps. He's actually in England at this time. He was in Ireland at this time, ready to go somewhere. He eventually ends up fighting Rommel in North Africa. The other brother has decided to go into the Army Air Corps, and he's now being trained. He eventually is one of those men that is flying the hump from India into China, 50 missions, and supplying the Chinese. And in fact, 600 of those airplanes that flew in those days have never been seen since.
Wow.
Flew into the Himalayas because of storms, because of weather, because of Japanese fighter pilots, whatever the case may be. There were 600 missing planes during that time.
So how do you get the information? Because this is fiction, but it's not really fiction. So how do you get the information?
This information has been going around in my little brain for a long time. I first taught history when I was teaching ROTC at Furman back in the late 70s. And so I got really involved into history itself. And then later on in my career, I have my master's degree in military history when I was at the Command and General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth. And so it's kind of been something that I've learned been a part of or know for a long time. And so since I retired, then I have a chance to read more, look more, and study more. And so a book that we're talking about today is a product of about 2.5-3 years worth of work. The first 2 years probably just nothing but research, just making sure that is there a story there, and how do we maybe put that all together? And then the last year is doing the writing and just letting your mind kind of think in terms of what could this be going on? What's the dialogue that makes this story work?
And as a military man, being in the military for 20 years, you got a pretty good idea.
I've served a number of different units. And again, my charter to myself is I'm not going to change history. That's not what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. I'm simply trying to make it breathe. I'm trying to take what actually happened and tell the story in such a way, put the dialogue in there that you as a reader can kind of really see what's going on, but you're learning history at the same time.
That's a good book when you can do that, yeah.
And I've been told on a number of occasions because of the kind of thing I've done, this is the fourth book, as you know, that we're pretty much on the right track for that.
Now, do you talk to other veterans?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Talk.
Short answer would be yes. But had the opportunity to speak to a number of different groups, whether it's men's groups or church groups or military groups or Rotary clubs or Kiwanis clubs or whatever, about these books, because there's an interest in, I think, in what Dad did in World War II. Mm-hmm. But Dad never talked about it.
I've talked to many military people that they don't want to talk about it unless you're in the military. Now, if you're a military, mano a mano, a military, they'll talk about it. But if I ask questions, they're not going to tell me.
Well, I was going to say that is that I think people, my opinion is that guys, particularly from World War II, when you think of the carnage that they saw, mm-hmm. not only to their own units, but to the civilians and other people, they love you dearly, but you can't relate.
Right.
You weren't there.
Right.
And so, but at the same time, that gentleman will talk to others if they've had a similar experience. And so because of the things that I've done, we'll have a pretty good dialogue on that. It's interesting because you'll see these same men when they go to a reunion. And I always encourage men of World War II and Korea and so forth to go to reunions because once they see their old friends, those guys will get off in a corner with a bunch of beer. They'll be there for 5 or 6 hours.
And they're no longer old.
That's right.
They're back in the day.
Right. And I have the opportunity to go to not only reunions for units that I was in, but also to my father's bomb group unit in World War II. And so seeing those 94, 95-year-old guys is just really, really a neat thing to do. And I would encourage your reader, or your listeners rather, to when they see men who are wearing World War II caps or Korean caps or whatever the case may be, is there's a tendency, I think, to go up to those men and say, thank you for your service. I would always recommend something a little bit different. Is just say, sir, I noticed you were in World War II. Could you tell me where you were, what you did? Could you tell me a story or two? That, just get them to talk. Mm-hmm. Because if they have these stories, but if you and I don't ask them about that, they won't tell you.
That's true.
But when they pass away next year, the year after, those stories are gone.
They definitely are.
So I want to get those stories now. I want to hear
those stories. Well, I feel very blessed because I was able to go on an honor flight several years ago as media and just had the best time. I was told when these guys get on the plane, all of a sudden they're transformed from old stooped over men to sitting up. And they kept telling me, hey, radio lady, I've got a story for you. And I recorded more great stories than I can ever imagine, and the experience of that day is just awesome. And anybody that's been on an honor flight, military people that have been, they just come back so pleased, and it's just such an honor to be able to be part of that.
Well, you're in the company of heroes, but at the time they didn't think of themselves as heroes, and really today they don't think of themselves that either. But in fact, if they had not done what they did, we would not be talking about it.
That's one thing that we seem to forget, don't we, is that it is so important that we remain strong, that we have a military so that we can have the type of life that we want to have.
Well, and I think also you hear the term the greatest generation, and I can't argue with that phrase, but the third book I did was on Kings Mountain, the Battle of Kings Mountain, which is up here, of course, near Cowpens and between Spartanburg and Charlotte. That is the most famous Revolutionary battlefield most people know nothing about. But if those men there who had names like Sevier and Shelby had not done what they did, we would not be talking about that we won the Revolution today.
Wow.
So you've got a lot of stories that are there. It's just we don't know them.
That's right. Well, listen, it is coming up on South Carolina Radio News. We are talking with Ed DeVos right here this afternoon. He has written written four books. The one we're talking about today is A Fascinating Family of Warriors. He is going to be at McCaslin's on Saturday from 11 to 1. Hope if you haven't already seen him or read the book that you'll go by and pick one up and talk to him. He'd love to talk to you. Hey, don't you go away. We'll be right back. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. We're talking with Ed DeVos, and we are talking about his one book we're really talking about, his newest book, Family of Warriors, and it's a very interesting read. He mixes a great blend of fiction with real stories, real facts mixed together there. And, you know, it's about a family of five, and it'll tell you. But the thing that I find most interesting is how many times, because there were five, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Five. And one was a set of twins.
Mm-hmm.
And so the very fact that his parents five times said goodbye to sons, not knowing if they'd ever come back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a...
Well, and in fact, in the book, one of them does not come back.
Okay. Well... That would not be a surprise, would it, really,
no.
Given
the numbers, no, it wouldn't.
It wouldn't. So,
and two of them were POWs, one German and one with Japanese.
You know, we really, I have never been in the military. I am married to a military man. In fact, I had to break him of the idea that I was in the Army with him. I mean, it was a tough job, but somebody had to do it. Yes, I'm talking about Jeff Eller. He's a West Point grad, and he just decided, you know, just out of the box that I was the Army that he didn't have around him anymore. So
we can get like that sometimes.
Yes.
My wife understands that, yeah.
Yes, but military people have their own way, their own thoughts, and, you know, I think it is terrific in today's world to be able to sit down and read a book and think back to the way things were. And like you and I were talking off air just now, we talk about, oh, my God, you were talking about the dropping the atomic bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't we relate that story? I think that's great. I mean, put it in context to what was happening then.
What you and I were talking about was that think about if you're now it's May of 1945, and all of a sudden you're President Truman. First question is when did your boss die? And the answer is about a month before that, in April of 1945, at Warm Springs, Georgia, when President Roosevelt died. But he never told President, at that point in time, Vice President Truman about the atomic bomb, about the Manhattan Project. And so after Roosevelt died, the military leaders come in to Truman and say, "Hey, boss, we have this thing called the Manhattan Project, and we're going to test it in July. And then we're going to know what you want to do with it."
And he hasn't had any background
to
this.
Not a bit. And they go on to say, "But and now, Mr. Truman, the guys who fought and won the war in Europe are now on ships heading for Japan, because we need those divisions that fought in Europe who are very experienced to fight against the Japanese. So it won't just be the guys who are already in the Pacific. It'll be these reinforcements coming from Europe. Because we need about 100 divisions, we think, to attack Japan. And in that process, we're going to lose between 500,000 and 1 million men."
And Truman is sitting there going, "Oh, my God.
Going, what am I, you know?" So imagine if you're Truman, but we have this bomb that we think might help. And so sometimes I relate that story because people want to think in terms of 2017 times. They want to think, well, we shouldn't have dropped the bomb or whatever. Put it in terms of 1945. Put it in terms of losing more men, and put it in terms of the war going on and on and on unless we use these weapons that we have. And so we try and get people to think about what it was like in those times and not just blasé, blissfully say, "Well, I wouldn't have done that." Well, let's think about that a little bit.
Sure.
Let's really put yourself in their moccasins and see what you have done.
You know, that has to be some of what President Donald Trump is going through.
I would think, sure.
You know, what he was against, mm-hmm. and what he mm-hmm. looks at now, mm-hmm. and says, "Oh, mm-hmm. my God, this is the situation that we are facing."
Right.
And it has to be some of that same type of thing.
And I think it's also the fact that of course, there are a lot of people that are sniping at him for different things.
Sure.
But they do not have the information, but they certainly want to critique. But again, they don't have the information.
Correct.
And so stories will be told later as far as why things were actually done a certain way, because, again, there's more. The president has the information, not the reporters, not that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, you just think about just waking up, and here you are. Now you're the president, and it's a whole different ball game.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep.
And you know, we go back to John F. Kennedy, and you know, and my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. And you and I were also talking about the millennials that are going into the service today against actually some great odds against people saying, oh, are you doing the right thing?
Mm-hmm. Or why are you doing it?
And why are you doing it? You don't have to.
Yeah,
it's no, there's no draft. You don't have to do it.
And that's really why the Kennedy statement, I think, is we purposely put in there to get people into date. Many people don't know that Kennedy said that.
Oh, come on.
Oh, come on. Yeah, well, we'll give him a test. We'll run a test. And see
all right, we'll have to run
many
a test.
Many people don't know what Kennedy said or when he said it. It was his inaugural address.
Right.
You know, what can you, you know, it's not, you know, ask what you can do for your country, not what your country can do for you.
Exactly.
How many people in today's society agree with that? How many people would say, I can understand that.
Yeah.
But they just want, we have many people in our country simply just want to receive versus contributing.
Right. Yes, and that's, exactly.
Not supposed to be that way.
It's not. And, you know, I think one of the things that actually sets Greenwood County apart a little bit is the number of military who are living in this county.
Mm-hmm.
I was astounded the other day when General Livingston was giving his speech, and he was talking about most states have like 4.5% military, retired, active, whatever in their state, but that in South Carolina it's about 8%, I think he said,
and
in Greenwood County it's right at 10%.
Yeah,
that's huge statement.
It is a statement. It certainly is. And these are people that we live with and go to the store with who know what sacrifice is about.
Exactly.
And maybe not personally, but certainly within their family, and they know why we live in a great country, and they don't debate that too much.
No, and you know, I'm from Maine originally, and in Maine, the military was just something. It was in the distance. It wasn't anything that we lived in.
But now you're in the South, so that's a different story.
Well, that's the point I was going to make, is that in the South, there is certainly a pride for country and a pride for those that serve, and noticing when somebody has served to either thank them, or I like the idea of asking the stories and everything they might tell.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a totally different philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it is something to be very proud of. So we're talking about your book, A Long Ways Around, a lot of different aspects. If you would like to know more about military history wrapped in a fictional story, would that be the right way to say it?
Yes, ma'am. I would think that would be correct. Yep.
Yes. And, you need to see about this book, this latest one, Family of Warriors. Now, you've written several other books. I tell you what, let's save that. Let's get a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back. We're going to tell you about some of the other books Ed has written. So stay right with us. We'll be right back. Don't forget, Saturday afternoon, 11 to 1, he will be at McCaslin's, and he'd love to talk to you and see what you thought of his interview today right here on WCRS.
Well, maybe we don't want to talk about that.
Oh, it's a success, Ed. We'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We've been having a good time here with Ed DeVos talking about his latest book, Family of Warriors. He was in the military for 20 years, retired, and then he decided after he retired from his self-employed businessman job and financial services, he decided, what am I going to do with myself? And, you know, everybody sits down and says, I think I'll just start writing books, right?
Good luck.
But you were telling me about how difficult your first book was to write.
Yes, the first book I really wanted to... A nagging thought for a long time was, if you think about the centurion at the cross, and you think about that guy at when Jesus dies, the centurion says, "Surely this was the Son of God." And I kept thinking, how did he know that? How did he arrive at that conclusion? He'd seen him for a certain number of hours, and so I thought, well, perhaps he knew something about Jesus before that day. And so I began to look through study through the Bible in terms of how we could maybe make a story of that. And so we decided, okay, that centurion could be the same guy who took John the Baptist's head off 10 months before that.
Wow.
And as he did that, he got blood on his sandals. The blood doesn't come off leather, and so he could see that stain. And so that became the name of the book, The Stain. And he began to learn more about John. He learned more about who John was. And then he started to hear about this guy who was rumbling through Galilee, who talked an awful lot like John. And it was Jesus. So he starts to learn more about Jesus, but never sees him until Palm Sunday. And so the story follows all those things. We were very specific in making sure that we did not change anything with what the Bible said. I'm not in the business of changing the Bible, believe me. But just making a dialogue that could probably fit into all that. And so at the crucifixion, the centurion, he's the guy ordered by Pilate to do that. He follows all the normal traditions that he's supposed to within the Roman army. But then after that, then he meets with some of the disciples, and they tell him, they ask him, say, we think you should be one who can give your life to Jesus. Why would I do that? You know, I killed God's son.
Right.
Why would God do that? It's because God will forgive you. You were the guy, centurion, who stayed there during the whole crucifixion. You were the guy that stayed there in the thunderstorm. You were the guy who pounded those nails into his wrists. And so we believe that that God will forgive you of your sins. And just sit down and pray. And so he said, I don't know what to say. But they say, just talk to God. And so he does. And this is at night, at dawn comes up, and he looks down, and he sees that the stain on his sandals is gone.
Oh, now that puts chills in you.
And Philip, who's one of the disciples, says, Centurion, if we could look in your heart, we would see that stain is gone in your heart, just like it's gone from your sandals. That's the end of the book.
Right.
But it really tries to tell the story about, you know, what it was like to be that centurion. It's a great Easter story, and one that almost did not get finished.
Because
I was at a point in time, how do I end this book? That little ending I just gave you, that was not in my head.
And it took you a good while to write this one, didn't it?
Well, about 10 years off and on, because I was still working.
Oh my gosh.
Which is not unusual when you start talking to people who write. But suffice to say, I almost put the book down, but I was up in Kings Mountain doing a research on another book, and ran to the South Carolina expert of Kings Mountain, a guy named Dr. Bobby Moss. Dr. Moss died about 3 or 4 years ago. And we were just talking, just as you and I are, and he said that he had been a pastor in his former life. And I said, sure, I didn't know that. And he says, yep. And he says, in my last sermon was about the centurion at the cross. And I just, I looked at him and I said, would you say that one more time? And so he did, and talked a bit more about that. He says, this is a guy who nobody remembers him, but he was there. And so I came back and told my wife that, and so we just decided that, okay, let's put Kings Mountain down. Let's finish up the Stain, which is the title of that book, and have been blessed because of that. It's now, in fact, we're working with the editor, the publisher now. We're going to put out a second edition on that book and put some maps in there and all the scripture verses and so forth that relate to that book, and that will be coming out either August or September or something, but that'll be the second edition of that book.
Well, congratulations. So
That was the first one.
Yeah.
So, quite a, almost didn't get written.
Almost didn't get written. And then the second book you wrote?
Second book was my father's unit. I think I mentioned that a little bit earlier about a mission that he was on, and that was just to honor those men that I still have the opportunity to see some of them every year. The last reunion was in Nashville in September, and so those guys are still. This is their 36th or 37th reunion.
Wow!
Many of them are obviously no longer with us, but the children of those World War II men get together every year. They want to keep that memory of Dad alive.
That's awesome.
And so they keep having these reunions, and it's just a wonderful time to look at all the stories and all the pictures all over again and that sort of thing. But that was the second book. Third book, we finally got back to Kings Mountain, and that book is now, it's called Revenge at Kings Mountain. That book is actually on the bookshelves of the National Park, at the Kings Mountain National Military Park, which is part of the National Park Service.
How about that?
So that book is there at Kings Mountain, and it's from Greenwood to Kings Mountain is probably 2 hours. Mm-hmm. A great day trip. It's really what historians would call is the turning point of the Revolution. In 1780, things were kind of going the British way, and if Cornwallis had been able to keep on going north, he would have linked up with a British army up north. They would have been more than enough to take on Washington, and we would be speaking something different today. But at King's Mountain,
The Queen's English, perhaps?
Yeah, perhaps yes. That. Maybe drink a lot more tea, I don't know. But at King's Mountain, you have men. Many of your listeners probably have been to Sevierville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
John Sevier fought at King's Mountain. Many of your listeners perhaps have gone through Shelby, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac Shelby fought at King's Mountain. Some of your folks know Winston-Salem.
Yep.
Joseph Winston fought at King's Mountain. So a lot of the history of North Carolina, South Carolina stems from those guys who fought there. And it's a great thing to do. Again, to go there, Ranger Station's got about a half hour film about King's Mountain. The walk around the mountain itself where there's all these different plaques to tell you what happened would maybe take an hour or so, an hour and a half walk, maybe 2 hours. But a great day trip from Greenwood just to go to that piece of history that you can still walk on today. It's a very quiet place. The only sound you hear are jet airplanes going into Charlotte Airport. And so you can really just kind of wrap your arms around what happened there, and it's a great story.
Excellent. So what's the next book you're writing?
Oh, I'm not sure at this point. I'll be quite – nothing has crawled up my leg and bit me on the leg to say write this at this point in time. I've done so much research on so many things. I'm thinking that there are a lot of Christian magazines, military magazines that can – they're always looking for short articles.
Sure.
And I've got a lot of short articles from all this research that I've done. I'm thinking really kind of looking at that quite a bit. Although the speaking events that I do, their speaking engagements, I'm already scheduled out through February of 2018 with different things already and with more that seem to be coming all the time. So that's still a big part is just speaking about these four books already.
Well, they certainly are fascinating. His latest book, Family of Warriors, he's going to be at McCaslin's on Saturday afternoon, Memorial, or Saturday 11 to 1, Memorial Day weekend. That's this Friday, or this Saturday. So make sure you get out there and stop by and see Ed and talk to him about his books. I guess that's some of the fun parts of things is being able to talk to people. Mm-hmm. About all the different aspects, whether it's mm-hmm. veterans from World War II, such as there are, or the Korean War or Vietnam, or people that really don't know that much about the military at mm-hmm. all but have an interest.
People have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I did a what's called Read and Feed at the Mac in McCormick mm-hmm. a couple weeks ago, and they always try to have the food that's there as part of what's the subject of the book. And so I got some MREs from the Army-Navy store here in Greenwood. Thanks to
and you
Clint,
pass those out?
Thanks to Clint over there at the Army-Navy store. And so that was the meal.
Oh, my God.
And actually, they kind of liked them. Now, those are present-day MREs. They're not World War II MREs or C rations. But it was still gave some folks an idea about what the heck these guys eat. And they it was kind of interesting for them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, Ed, and see about booking you after February of 2018, how would they do that?
Just give me a call if you would, or email me. But the telephone number is area code 864-391-2346. I live down in McCormick at Savannah Lakes. Again, that number is 864-391-2346.
Okay.
Or the email address is edevos, just at wctl.net.
That's right.
So those two ways.
But if you're looking for an interesting, I've heard him speak several times. It's always interesting, I think, this interview this afternoon. We covered a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm.
We talked some about the book.
What did we miss? What did we miss?
What did we miss? I don't know what we missed, but we talked about a lot of different aspects, and that's what I think is so interesting, to know somebody that has a military background who has sat down, analyzed, read, and studied, and come together with some excellent books for you to read. If you'd like something to share with your kids,
absolutely.
It's a good book.
Absolutely. In fact, it's one of the things that we tell folks. The books are also on Amazon and Kindle and all that sort of things are easily found. But yeah, the number of people that are closer to our age, you know, who want to pass their information to children, these are great gifts for birthdays and Christmases, and that's always kind of a big time for us.
Absolutely.
In the book world, I might add that is that's the big time for books, is October and November because of Christmas.
Sure.
And so we're always trying to kind of let folks know there are other times in the year besides those times. So.
Sure. But if you want to see him this coming Saturday, 11 to 1, he'll be there and he'll have his books. And this new one, Family of Warriors, is a good one. So, Ed DeVos, thank you so much for coming and being with us this afternoon.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's
thank
right.
You.
And we'll be watching you. And since I'm in MOA and you're in MOA, I know we'll see each other again. So
okay.
Thanks so much for visiting with
us
today.
You
well, you are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. I'm Ann Eller, my very special guest, Ed DeVos. And
I'm not related to Betsy DeVos, although we had to pronounce the same way.
It has been great to have you here with us this afternoon. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
This is WCRS. Bye-bye, everybody.